Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
I mean, what's that football focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
As a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFL.
Do you not understand that they are that way because you're Joe Flacco?
You just like to discredit things that people deserve credit for.
That you can't possibly be expected to defend that.
Talk about the game, Sam. So, who cares about what people think about us?
Yeah, I like football season, all the things that go with it.
Welcome in to the PFF NFL podcast. Steve Palazzolo here with Sam Monson and our friend Nate Tice joining us for our very special player comp episode. Welcome in, Nate.
How you doing? This feels like it's been in the works a little bit. There's been a lot of spitballing and brainstorming for this, so I'm glad we finally get to sit down and do it and go with some, I don't want to spoil it at all, but some obscurity, maybe some, you know, some wrestling references apparently we might throw in here today.
There could be wrestler comps. You never know. But, like, that's this is where this all started, right? Nate, you were throwing out player comps last year on Twitter. I know, Sam, you caught a bunch of them. And the Twitter sphere just could not handle Nate's player comps last year.
That's what I love about Nate's comps is, you know, everyone's throwing out player comps this time of year, right? But everybody's throwing out, like, oh, this guy reminds me of insert Hall of Famer, you know? Yeah. Shades of Randy Moss crossed with Terrell Owens and a bit of Jerry Rice thrown in there as well. Whereas Nate was comping these guys to, like, random, moderately successful NFL players, right? Yeah. That, like, everybody else would take as a gross insult to this player's prospects. Oh, you're telling me this guy's only going to play in the league for 6 years and be, you know, make one Pro Bowl? But that's, like, A, it's the most realistic, and B, they're actually the most interesting players to talk about.
What? Yeah, it's, you forget that a lot of the NFL is made up of not the 1% of the 1% Hall of Famers.
Right.
So it's, and I get, and some of that's, I don't want to, like, get too far ahead of myself because there might have been one or two I did throw in here, but like last year, I think really a lot of those started with maybe 2 years ago with CEH getting drafted. And I was like, man, he reminds me of Bowelde Moore. And I was like, that's a compliment. And people were like, he's so much better than that. How dare you compare him to Bowelde Moore? And I was, That was a good thing, guys.
Right.
I meant that as a compliment.
And now we're like a couple of years later, and he wishes he was Mowelde Moore.
Mowelde Moore.
Oh, yeah. Man, the Chiefs could use Mowelde Moore right now
yes.
in their offense.
Yes.
Were there any other, before we get into it, were there any other over the last couple of years that you got a lot of pushback against? Any fun ones?
What's his face? Najee Harris, I compared to James Conner. And that was the one that.
Pre-draft, really, right?
Part
before the Steelers even drafted him.
Yeah, which I thought was hilarious 2 months later that they drafted him. And, like, yeah, it made a lot of sense why they might like him and stuff. But that one was the one where everyone's like, he's so much better. Are you kidding me? Do you even know what you're talking about? And that's why I said, oh, yeah, I actually coached James Conner at Pitt. So have a little background on one of these guys. But, yeah, that was the one that kind of, like, really ruffled some feathers.
And Conner goes on to have a better season than Najee Harris did last year as he moved to Arizona in a better situation, because that's what happens with running backs. So before we get into it, here's what I would like to do. So I sent Nate a list of players. I gave Sam a list of players. Mm-hmm. So we'll go off this, like, base list. We'll name the player, go around the horn. If you have a player comp, there are some that are, you know, you don't want to force it.
Right.
Yeah.
If you have a comp, you bring it to the table. We have to specify what the player comp is, right? Because
yes. We
talk a lot on the podcast here, Nate, you know, comparison is not always equating, right? So it's not like you could say shades of Randy Moss. You could say he does this one thing like Randy Moss if you want.
Mm-hmm.
You could say production comp. You can say just the way he, you know, runs a slant comp, whatever you want, right? Just, you know, put the qualifier on there. Before we're not, I promise we won't run to social media and say, you know, Nate Tice thinks everybody's Randy Moss. Like, that's not going to happen. And but like,
you just, I do have some late '90s Vikings comparisons in here though, so we got a couple of NFC Central shoutouts here on my comparison.
NFC Central,
maybe not Randy Moss though.
See, he's speaking my language here. He always referenced the Central of the NFC and the AFC when relevant. So, all right, we're going to get into it in 1 second, but first, the PFF NFL podcast is sponsored by Western and Southern Financial Group. While you focus on your roster moves, Western and Southern helps advance your money moves. Buying your first home, planning to start a family, wondering how to make your money grow? Western and Southern's playbook of life insurance, investment, and retirement solutions helps you rest assured on game day. Team up to understand needs and address goals with a game plan built just for you. Get started at westernsouthern.com/PFF. Wait till we get to the Manscaped read later.
Yeah.
Right in the middle of everything. It's going to be great. You've got to find the right segue for that one, though.
It's got to be, there's got to be a wrestling into Manscaped transition.
Somewhere. Oh, absolutely. We'll figure out the best way to get to that for sure.
Yeah. We'll talk about a close shave or something of that sort. Yeah. Oh, that's a close comparison. And if you like close comparisons, you'll like a close shave.
I'm going to send you the read. You're doing it. You're doing it, Nate. You're taking it over. All right. Let's start here at the top of our list. Malik Willis, Liberty quarterbacks. You know, our dedicated listeners will already know Sam's comp here, but I will throw it to Nate for a player comp for Malik Willis out of Liberty.
He's a tough one, but I went with Tyrod Taylor with Malik Willis, and a lot of it is the throwing on the move, the occasional big arm throw that Tyrod used to be able to bring, and just, of course, to be able to create with his legs. I think Malik is, you know, a little thicker than Tyrod was, but that's what, there's a little kind of like, people forget Tyrod was running around in Buffalo a little bit, actually looked pretty good for a year or two. So I really think that's my kind of middle line comparison. It's more of a style of play, be able to throw the deep ball, be able to move a little bit, and, you know, create some plays with his legs. As far, and also size too, they're actually kind of built fairly similar, with Malik maybe being a little thicker. He's a thick boy.
It's kind of weird. We almost sort of forget what Tyrod started off being and think about more what he transitioned into, which is the sort of, you know, almost a buzzword for no big plays, you know, one of those conservative type quarterbacks that just doesn't bring enough to the table. But you're right. If you go back to like the very start of his Buffalo career, what Tyrod was bringing was like athleticism, rushing plays, and then every game there was like one absolutely absurd bomb or, you know, knife into the cover two hole shot, these amazing plays. And then somewhere along the line, he just stopped hitting those and became like, that was kind of where Buffalo went, all right, we do actually need something better than this, and we need to go looking for somebody that can make more of these big plays, because Tyrod started off making them and then they kind of evaporated.
Yeah, he almost like became too much of a quarterback, if that makes sense. It's almost like, hey, right, no, we want you to be the wild horse a little bit again, like kind of like, you know, kind of the creation plays that you could bring in. So yeah, that's kind of where that came from, was early career Tyrod with Malik.
And Nate stays in this era, while Sam is going to bring us back to the 90s with his player comp here.
To me, Malik Willis is Cordell Stewart adjusted for inflation. You know?
Adjusted for inflation.
Like, so, yeah, like Cordell Stewart, but in modern day, right? I think Stewart was screwed by his time. He was a guy that didn't fit into conventional prototypes at a time where the league just wasn't capable of adjusting the prototypes. It's like, if you don't fit in this cookie cutter shape, we have no idea what to do with you. So Slash became, you know, or basically try and play a wide receiver and throw you some gimmick stuff, but we don't actually understand how to do that properly. Now, like, if Cordell Stewart came into the league today, I think he would stay at quarterback and the league would have a much better idea of how to build a system around him that played to his strengths, a freaking cannon for an arm, the athleticism, and, you know, minimized what he did badly.
Yeah, be in the shotgun, because that's back when like being in the shotgun was like, oh no, only third and 10. Like,
right,
that was it.
So like now witchcraft. It's like a weakness.
Do all the other stuff.
Yeah, like being in the shotgun was some sort of failing. It was like a weakness of your offense. You can't do that.
Can't do that. And that, now the whole league's there. The I had that for a receiver once, like a couple of years ago. I was thinking about this, was Peter Warwick, was born before his time, because like it was like, nope, you have to be on the outside and you have to run vertical routes. And it's like, if Peter Warwick was now today, we'd be, holy crap, look at this guy running slants, bubbles, like all different ways to get the ball in his hands. So it's like, that's a guy always, when people ask me like, who's the guy that was born before his time, Peter Warwick's always a name that comes up. But that would be the Cordell Stewart.
Yeah,
that makes a ton of sense.
I've definitely thought about that before. And Peter Warwick is always one of those players. I think a lot of people think the same thing in terms of, definitely outside of his time in today's NFL, there's a much more natural role for Peter Warwick. But then I watched some more like old Peter Warwick tape, and I'm like, you know what? He would be better in today's NFL. On the other hand, a lot of his game is built on Reggie Bush-esque plays of just like, that just doesn't work in the NFL, you know? All bouncing Chris outside, stuff, yeah. All trying to like run laterally and make people miss, and eventually you just run out of room and there's nowhere to go. And unless you're Dante Hall for like 5 minutes, there's just no way out of that, right? You can only dance around laterally for so long before the NFL just buries you. So I kind of watched a bunch of that and I was like, yeah, Peter Warwick probably would have been a lot better in today's NFL, but I'm not sure he'd have been the player that we think he would have been, you know, based off of that.
And I think it was more for me, it was that the stuff that he was good at gets emphasized more now. Yeah. And I get what you mean, that it's a lot easier at Florida State when you're playing, you know, the old Big East, or not the old Big East, but, you know, when you're playing that kind of independent schedule and you get to play kind of whoever you want.
Right.
And it was the ACC, I know. But it's like playing those teams that all of a sudden you're playing against Boston College, and you're able to just break off five guys in like one little area. NFL athletes are better.
Yeah.
I think it's just how they would get the ball in his hands. It's definitely like where you can it's not every play, but it's like, oh, there's that flash. Like you said, that's actually interesting. We said Reggie Bush. I actually kind of get what you mean, but the ball in his hands and three jukes just to get 5 yards.
And always, always going outside, right? Like towards the sideline, towards the sideline, towards the sideline. Crap, the sideline's here. I've run out of room. Like there's just, there's nowhere to go.
Wait, I used Peter Warwick as a running comp for Lamar Jackson. I thought it was like Peter Warwick playing quarterback with a cannon, like, you know, with a cannon, obviously relative to the, you know, where Peter Warwick would throw. But Peter Warwick running, you know, slashing running style, playing quarterback.
I like that.
So I like the comps where you have to like string six things together for to make it work.
But this is the comp show. There are no rules here.
That's fine. That's fine.
And because of that, I don't have a great Malik Willis comp. I will say the thing I'll pull out, this is the closest thing to Josh Allen caliber throws. Yeah. Josh Allen caliber big-time throws from Malik Willis. Last year, right after the draft, it was like, who's going to be QB1 next year? And nobody really knew, and I think, you know, Spencer Rattler was getting a bunch of hype and all that stuff, but people were like, hey, check out Malik Willis. And it's like the overall tape wasn't great, but I just watched his big time throws. I'm like, oh, I cannot believe he's throwing 50-yard, you know, laser beams, you know, barely, you know, eight feet off the ground on the run, and all the way he's doing it. So he's the closest thing to Josh Allen level, I think, velocity and big time throws from Malik Willis.
Yeah.
Yeah. The wow throws are wow. that's what you're grading with him. It's there's a lot to, he has to work on, but it's every time I like get negative on him, he'll throw three in a row where I'm like, I get it. Yeah. Like, I get why you want to take a swing on this kind of guy, because that's the being able to place balls that he does and throw it off, you know, take it down the field on guys, and then, oh shoot, there's nothing there. All right, I'm gonna make three guys miss in a short space, like, or small space. It's like, that's why I understand why people are kind of bullish on Malik Willis.
His running ability is pretty special as well. I don't know if that's getting enough talk in this draft period. Like, I think it's like Lamar Jackson has almost broken everybody's perceptions or the scale of which you're being measured. Like, he might not be Lamar Jackson, but he's pretty freaking close. Like, in terms of not how he runs, but the effectiveness and how just difficult it is to stop the guy.
I would almost view it the other way and say, I don't think Jalen Hurts is a special runner. I think he's pretty good. And you can see that the Eagles can build a run game off it. Like, if you if you don't respect him, if you don't have somebody accounting for him in the run game, he'll pick up eight, right? He'll get out there and make some plays. I think Malik Willis is better than Hurts and not as good as Lamar, and there's a foundation to be built in the run game around Malik Willis for sure.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too, is that, you know, like you just brought up the Jalen Hurts comp, and then that's what we think of all these running quarterbacks being like Lamar or Vic, or even a young Steve Young or anything like that. When you talk about running quarterbacks, and with Malik and Jalen Hurts, it's a different, it's like power. They're like a power runner.
Right.
And you don't usually see that in the NFL. So it's kind of, it's a new kind of like type of way to win.
Yeah, completely agree. So we got some Malik Willis comps. So you went with Tyrod Taylor, Sam went with Cordell Stewart. I just said, you've got some shades of Josh Allen from a passing standpoint. Next guy up is Kenny Pickett, Little Hands Pickett, the Pittsburgh quarterback. What do you have here, Nate?
I went with Tyler Heinicke, and that is I sound mean when I'm saying this, but that is just, he's a tough guy to kind of figure out. I like his ability to create, I like his accuracy, but then there's just, I wanted more when I watched him. I thought he would be a lot more heady with his game, and that's where I saw some Joe Burrow comparisons coming in. And I was like, I'm not seeing that, guys. But when I watch him, I see just, you know, he can go make a play. He's the guy that I think people wanted Johnny Football to be, if that makes sense. We're going to the next level. Got to create, throw some accurate throws, a couple wow throws off platform, but just more of a, he's more of a steady Eddie. And I thought there would just be more kind of processing with him and all that. So I went with Tyler Heinicke. He's more of a supercharged version of that, but that's kind of what his play style is a lot of like, accuracy and create some plays with his legs and kind of pump up the team a little bit of toughness.
Yeah, the stat that we've been throwing out here a bunch is his average time to throw being over 3 seconds, right? And yeah, for us, it's just this proxy of, okay, normally in the NFL, you get rid of it at 2.5, 2.6. You've got your Bradys and Breezes at the top of that. And then the guys that are closer to three are guys who do scramble a lot and usually scramble to run. And that's not – he can scramble around and make plays. He's not a scramble to run guy.
Yeah.
But he's definitely being described – like, look at the description of Kenny Pickett compared to, say, Mac Jones last year at this time, and you kind of get similarities, like best, like when you hear people talk about them, right? You get this, well, they're ready to run an offense, he's accurate, he's this, and it's like they're completely different players. And to your point, like when you actually get into the tape, I don't think Pickett is really that guy. And that's, it is tough to come up with that comp of like a guy that is not quick and efficient in the passing game, but also not a scrambler, and you know, and just extends plays, but only to pass, I guess, as far as Pickett goes.
I liked what you're saying. Scramble to run. He scrambles to pass.
Yeah.
And I like that. That's a good way to kind of describe him.
Yeah, he does. But in a weird way, he does that and then almost always only after dropping his eyes in the pocket and trying to find space out. Like he's very bad at getting out of the pocket without looking for his way out. You know, like he has to navigate the path before he actually does it, as opposed to you see players that are able to just, they're able to get out without actually finding the way. You know what I mean? They can just drop. They can just keep their eyes downfield and understand where the space is and get out in that direction. Pickett, I think, is bad at doing that. So for me, he reminded me of like just a better version of John Kitna. You know, accurate, more athletic than you give him credit for, but not like enough for it to be a thing, for it to be like the thing he places his game on. Capable of awesome big plays, and you'll get that like moxie feel from him. But then, just too many bad plays, you know?
Do you remember how good John Kitna was?
For a while. Well, that's what I'm saying.
Is he better John Kitna or just, you know,
well, if John Kitna? Like, if you got peak John Kitna for his entire career, as opposed to like, you know, because John Kitna had like a couple of really good years, but the rest of it was like, you know, the baseline was a lot lower.
Yeah. He had the 1 year right before they drafted Palmer, right? Yeah. Or and then they also like, or the year that Palmer had to sit out. And then he had a year with the Lions that was pretty good with Mike Martz or something like that. I get what you mean, though. I totally get what you mean. Better athlete than you would expect, but that's not like his game.
Yeah.
Nate, so like, the only time I could talk about hockey, I know more about like 1994, 1995
hockey. Your sweet spot.
Yeah. I don't know any hockey players right now, but I know 94, 95
energy. Mario Lemieux.
Oh, yeah. Like Lemieux, like Yzerman, all that stuff. Yeah. Like I get the whole Blackhawks line and all that stuff thanks to NHL 95 and the whole series. I feel like Nate just knows you have this in like your bio, right? Like 02 to 06 or whatever NFL. Like you know that more than like today's NFL, right? Is that a fair assessment?
A little bit. I think that's why the comparisons really tickled Sam, because it was just like, oh, I recognize. It's a lot of names. It's funny when people like really like go like, that's fun. Like it's like U2, like Greg Rosenthal from NFL Network, like all these guys that like that kind of 1998 to 06 before, right? The Houston Texans, right when we started the 8th division. So like, that's like kind of like, I think that's like my sweet spot.
It's a really weird kind of period for me specifically. And I suspect a few different people at PFF because it's that block immediately before PFF was actually grading, but right when we all kind of knew, you know, we knew what we were doing. We knew the sort of foundation of what PFF would become. We just hadn't got the data yet, right? So we thought we knew all these things about NFL and football and players, and then it took a couple of years for PFF to start grading players and, like, reinforce or dispel some of those things. So it's kind of – it's that sweet spot of, like, when we were really into the game but didn't quite have the depth of data yet to back it all up.
But let's not ruin it. Let's not ruin it with data. So whatever you believed during that time
– Yeah.
You know, let's still believe it.
Yes.
Okay.
I was good. Touchdown to check down. Hey, my dad drafted a running back in the 4th round. He wasn't taking those guys high. So he kind of knew that. He was like, okay, we can just kind of go by committee, right? Now I have another back that I'm going to throw in here that was part of that committee. I'm pretty excited to throw that comp out.
See, he knew. He knew back in the day. We're not overspending on running backs.
Yeah. So get a receiver, throw it deep. Touchdown to check down. That's what it is.
Yeah, Taylor Heinicke and better John Kitna so far. And I also couldn't come up with a good one for Kenny Pickett.
Okay.
So, tough one. Failure so far.
I'm sure you'll manage something later.
I'll have a comp for this next player. Drake London, the USC wide receiver. Nate, what do you have for Drake London, if anything?
And this one I've been tough. You know, the obvious one was Mike Evans, but he's not as big as Mike Evans and not as twitchy as Mike Evans was. And I've heard Alshon Jeffrey, but Alshon was I appreciate because they both had kind of the bully ball style. But really, it's another USC guy, and that's Keyshawn Johnson. And if you look at their size and speed comparisons, there's a lot that's similar to their, like, to just their body composition. I mean, I think they're almost the same weight. I think they're almost the same height. Like, there's a lot, kind of like a slant monster, kind of like this, you know, big bully ball winner. So it's more of a style or a size comparison, because I think Drake London's a kind of a unique prospect to watch, you know, playing that air raid offense, even though I'm a big fan of his. But I went with Keyshawn Johnson. I wouldn't take him number one overall,
yeah,
like Keyshawn Johnson. but that's kind of a guy that I really like a little more as the comparison went. And I made it sound good in my head anyways.
Keyshawn, 6'4", 211.
Yeah. Drake London was such a weird player to watch because, you know, so I don't know how you go about kind of doing your player comps. From a methodological point of view, but when I'm watching players, sometimes a guy just immediately reminds you of somebody the way he's moving, you know? And it's great when you immediately are able to think of who that player is. You're like, oh, it's just, he moves exactly like whoever.
Yep.
What's more frustrating than almost anything else in the world is when a player clearly reminds you of somebody, and for the love of anything, you cannot think who it is.
Yes.
And that's what Drake London is to me. Every time I watch him play, it's like, I know that. I know that movement. I know that the whole body type, the way he's shifting around, and I cannot put my finger on exactly who it is. So I've been through like a few different players with Drake London, and I'm pretty sure none of them are the specific player that he's reminding me of. But the closest I've come is Plaxico Burress.
Nice. I like that.
Yeah.
I didn't realize how big Plax was, by the way. Because I actually looked him up this morning, so that's kind of funny. I didn't realize that he weighed like 230.
He was a big guy, thick. Yeah,
he looked skinny. Like he definitely felt much skinnier on the field. But was he 6'6"? He was tall.
Yeah, he was a big guy. Yeah.
He was a big boy.
It's sort of, you know, one of the things Drake London's good at, better than I think people give him credit for, is run after the catch skills. Mm-hmm. And when you sort of say, oh, Plaxico Burress, people are like, yeah, but Plaxico couldn't run after the catch. In the NFL, sure, but if you go back to like Michigan State, there's a ton of plays that dude just like smoking people after the catch and running away from the defense and
throwing a guy off.
Yeah, like Michigan State Plaxico Burress more than shooting himself in the thigh Plaxico Burress.
So before the gun incident,
yeah,
Plaxico. All right, I got a comp here. So this was like first impression comp.
Okay.
When watching Drake London, and it was Courtland Sutton from the Denver Broncos. So when I watch Courtland Sutton at SMU, I'm thinking, okay, big body. When you see the big-bodied receivers, a lot of times you think about the contested catches and what they do at the catch point. But then Sutton always surprised me after the catch, right, with a little bit of shiftiness and all that stuff. So combining those two things, I got the same vibe watching Drake London, right? He is not just a catch point guy. He is not just he's also not a guy that I don't think has zero chance of separating, right? Like when we watch N'Keal Harry, we're like, you know, corner's going to be glued to N'Keal Harry, but he's really shifty in space. Drake London, I think, can get open, kind of like a Mike Evans can get open, even though it doesn't always make sense. They're open, but Drake London after the catch, I think, also has a little bit of shiftiness to him as well. And that all reminded me of Sutton.
I like that. And I like that because that's what surprised me with London is he was able to like sink on his routes and come out of stuff. And like right after the catch, he'd be able to like plant his hand on the ground. He didn't look stiff. And I could see that with Sutton because I remember watching Sutton and he'd like catch a ball and he was almost like a skater where he'd keep his like shoulders north, but he could like move side to side.
Yeah.
Or like a skier, I guess is a better way to put it. And I remember that and I could see that with London a little bit, being able to like catch. And he's kind of like shifty, but it's kind of like a unique manner how he does it. Yeah, I'm a big fan of London. I think he's absolute stud. I've been yelling at the USC quarterbacks for the last few months for not getting the ball a little bit quicker so we can end the separation arguments pretty early.
Yeah, right. I mean, I like Nate's descriptions here. That's good.
Yeah.
The skater comp and, you know, looking at shoulder tilt and all. That's good. That's really good.
Yeah, yeah. The more, like, particularly the more obscure sports you can rope into this, the better. I'm a big fan of that. Like,
I got curling coming up too.
Nice. You know.
We never use baseball here.
Or on our wide receiver podcast that we did a while ago, I was saying how Drake London, because of the contested catch skills and not just like at the catch point bodying a dude, but just understanding how to react to the ball and move, manipulate his position, the cornerback's position, the whole thing. He reminded me of a GAA player, Gaelic football player, because those guys are all about just high pointing the ball, like going up and understanding not just where to go and high point it, but like how to maneuver around players to make sure you're the dude that's going to get it at the high point. And that he's so good
absolutely.
At that.
Yeah, no, how he adjusts the ball. Yeah, I mean, a lot of the guys say, oh, they have a basketball background. And it's like, okay, you can see him jump a little bit. But yeah, his hand-eye coordination's like it's excellent. Like it really is. And he can make the awkward catches and low and high and like also just, like it's a lot of times you see the ones like it's the red zone fade ball and it's like, okay, yeah, the guy just has a 40-inch vert. He just dunks on the guy. And you'll see London and even Alec Pierce is another guy that does this. They're able to kind of like contort the hands. So it's like I high point. Oh shoot! The rebound flicked off the rim. Oh, I got to catch it over here, and that's where you can see that kind of hand eye coordination come up. He's a fun player.
The guy that always could not do that instantly I'm remembering is Matt Jones. You know because he's a former quarterback.
Yeah.
He's 6'6", supposedly ran a 4.37 that never showed up on the actual football field. All he became was like a pretty good slant runner, like a pretty good possession receiver. But the Jaguars would try to throw him fades all the time, and he just would never come down.
Fall
with
away.
It. Yeah, he just was not. He just didn't have good ball skills, right? Yeah. So I mean, when you see it, good or bad, it stands out. And I think London certainly on that good end of the spectrum there.
Absolutely.
Let's go Treylon Burks now, the wide receiver from Arkansas. We've made the point, and maybe you'll answer this question: how many receivers historically do you remember that maybe had weight issues, battled weight issues? Came up with Mike Williams from USC and maybe Alshon Jeffrey that actually had some weight fluctuation that was an issue. I can't think of many others.
I have another one, and this is my comparison for him, and that's Josh Gordon.
Oh, there you go.
Wow. Josh Gordon had other stuff, but he also battled some weight stuff because he got up to like 240 for a little bit there.
True.
And that's who his play style. This Treylon Burks is actually one of the most unique watches I've ever had. Like, it's such a it's just every play it's like, okay, how's that translate? And okay, they're doing them like they're using them like a running back here, and they're motioning him across every single play. He doesn't just like just sit. He's never set and just goes and like runs a route. It's like everything has to be manipulated. But I went with Josh Gordon because just all the run after the catch. I think when I've saw some of the highlights of Treylon and just watched him on film, and he plays faster than his time speed a little bit. He has that build up speed at a big body like Josh Gordon did. And I just have like a vivid memory of like Josh Gordon when he had those like back-to-back 200-yard games or whatever he did the one year in Cleveland. And he caught a slant. And I want to say it was against the Steelers or something. He took it like 80 yards.
Yep.
And it was like, that's where it was like, I saw Treylon Burks do that. And it finally, the light bulb went off for me with him. So really it's just that build-up speed, yards after the catch, and just a little bit of bully ball in him, but not quite. He doesn't always play to his size, so yeah, that's where my Burks comparison comes from.
That's what got me. So cop out again. I couldn't come. I could not find a Treylon Burks comp.
Do you have a role in this show, or are you just?
No, I'm the facilitator.
Okay.
Listen, did you see the person that tweeted at us yesterday?
Yeah. Because
I missed two shows last week, and paraphrasing here, the tweet was basically like, watching the show without Steve is like, you know, when my dad would watch us, and you know, and my mom's away, and you know, dad's like, you know, trying to keep the family together, but you know, something's just not right. So that's my role here, right? I'm the mom facilitating, making sure that we stay on track here. And every now and again, I'll throw the comp in there when needed.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I agree with on the like. Every time I wanted to say, well, Burks, he's great at the catch point. He does this. And then like he just wouldn't jump the next time or whatever. Like his balance at the catch point seemed off. And I'm trying to connect the dots. Like who should be good at something but isn't always there? And who shouldn't be good after the catch maybe but is, right? I'm trying to figure out who that guy is. And plus sometimes I already knew what your comp was going to be, Sam, and I kind of liked it.
The build-up speed thing is interesting, though, because a lot of times you see these plays where they're just, you know, running past everybody in the defense, and it's because you've kind of taken away the acceleration part of that, right? Like you're already at the point where you've caught the ball and you then start to run past people, you're already at like 60% speed or whatever, because you've run your initial stem, you've made your break, you've caught the ball, and you're somewhere upwards of like 50% pace. And then you just go from 50% to 100%. Like most of the 40 is the first 50%, right? Mm-hmm. So you've kind of removed that part. So a guy like Treylon Burks with his 4.55 or whatever it is, like half of the 4.55 is irrelevant at the point where he's caught this pass and is running past, you know, the entire Texas defense or whatever it is.
So really quick, Josh Gordon, looking at his workout numbers now, was pretty much 45th to 55th percentile in everything, in 40, in 10 yard split, in vertical, in broad. He ran a 4.52 at 6.3, 224. In the way you're describing it, Nate, like when you just watch him on the football field, it's like, well, he took a slant and ran by everybody. And he was a great deep threat for that short period of time and off and on later in his career, where just he was football fast, right? It showed up on the field. And you could absolutely watch Treylon Burks at Arkansas and say, it's working. It doesn't match 4.55, but it's absolutely working.
The player that he reminded me of is David Boston.
Oh, yeah.
Who was another guy that, again, like David Boston was fast as hell on the field, but he only ran like a 4.4 or something. Like he didn't have, you know, 4.3 flat speed. He wasn't a blazing 40 time type of guy. Now, he was more explosive. He had a pretty crazy vertical, and who knows how much of that. Yeah. Who knows how much of that was, you know, supplement assisted, shall we say. Yeah. But David Boston was like an absolute brick. Was fast on the field, would just catch and run by people, and was so powerful. But again, was inconsistent. Obviously ended up having injury problems and as they say, supplement issues. But David Boston, I think, was a pretty good Treylon Burks comp.
Yeah, is this like the 240-pound, 3% body fat, David Boston?
I mean, look, somewhere in the middle. You know, body development, David Boston.
David Boston was like a 2000 quarterback, like the year 2000, like the turn of the quarterback. I'm sorry, receiver. Right. Like that is like just a name. I think like Michael Pittman for running back. Just all these juiced up monsters at these positions. My David Boston story was we had mesh in at Wisconsin, just to play mesh, but we called it Boston. And we started running plays off of it. And so we had a play called Patriot. We had a play called Celtic, all these like Boston sports teams names. I finally asked Coach Chris, Paul Chris, I was like, so why do we call this Boston? And he goes, when my brother was coaching Arizona, they just ran this play over and over to David Boston. So we just stole it and just called it Boston. And it was like, because it was all mesh. So he was catching a crosser.
Yeah.
That big buildup speed. And I'm sure a lot of DBs didn't want to tackle him. So he's just run it up the sideline. So it makes a lot of sense, all that run after the catch stuff.
And you thought it was New England, and it was really just David Boston.
It was David.
That's great. Love it. David Boston comp for Treylon Burks and Josh Gordon.
Josh Gordon's a good one.
I do like that one. And if so, this is what happens with comps, right? So we shouldn't necessarily equate him, but now in my head I'm thinking peak Josh Gordon was really, really good.
As was peak David Boston.
And now I'm thinking, just give me Treylon Burks in the first. I'll take him the first round. I don't care.
Every time I talk myself out of him, I talk myself back in. Yeah. Like he's been one of the hardest guys for me to place my finger on.
I was on the radio this morning, and I'm like, honestly, he could go anywhere from like the middle of the first round to the middle of the second round, and I wouldn't be at all shocked.
Would
like,
Blake and I?
Right, either one of those, and I would be like, yeah, makes perfect sense. That's like a full, like it's a massive range. And I'd be like, yeah, of course. That's exactly where he should be going.
Yeah, usually it's 15 to 20. It's, 15 to 50.
Yeah.
Like that's really what it is with him.
A huge potential range for Treylon Burks.
Yeah.
All right, let's get on to Jameson Williams, Alabama wide receiver. I have a comp here because I use it every single year, I think, for every speed receiver. So give me the Jameson Williams comp here, Nate.
Yeah, the easy one is DeSean Jackson, just because of the home run speed. But I went and I spoiled it a little bit with the tweet because I was so excited when I watched him. And that was Bullet Bob Hayes of the Cowboys.
Yes.
And when I watched it, I watched some highlights this morning. There's like a 30-minute highlight video of Bullet Bob Hayes. I was like, holy shit, this is him. This is like they run the same. Like, they're both body catchers. Like I was like, it was crazy for me. And they're about the same height. Bullet Bob Hayes was about 6 foot. Yeah, so that I'm going bold Bob Hayes, and that's what Jameson Williams' game is.
Speed, speed, speed. I freaking love that.
That's great. I mean, the point of comps is to, you know, paint a picture for the for the reader, and now we our listeners, you know, and viewers have to go they have to go Google some or go check out some YouTube highlights.
Have we got a suitable cold weather game for Jameson Williams to come? Because remember there was that game, was it the Ice Bowl? One game that Dallas played in that was like minus whatever at kickoff time. Bob Hayes spent the entire game with his hands like stuffed into his pants or in the warmers or whatever. Like he literally, any play that he wasn't catching the ball, he literally would like stuff his hands down his pants and they'd be like, oh, Bob's not getting the ball this play. He's like,
just walking off the line, just waddling off. He's a Florida guy. I think he went to Florida A&M. So yeah, he wasn't ready for that. Who for that was coldness?
What was the Mahomes comp that Zach? That Zach?
Sonny, was it Sonny Jurgensen or
Sonny Baugh?
Sammy Baugh.
Sammy Baugh. Oh gosh. Yeah. So Zach Robinson, now of the Los Angeles Rams. I don't want to give away all of his scouting secrets now that he's the official quarterback coach over there with the Rams, but he did have the Sammy Baugh comp for Patrick Mahomes.
Well, I think it speaks to just how deep, you know, Zach goes into the archives where he's like, oh, that guy reminds me exactly of Sammy Baugh.
And it's good. Sometimes you throw a comp out like this to show the level you're willing to go to. That's true. Over there just, I'll skip this one, I'll sit it out, and Nate's going back to, Bob.
No, he's diving deep into the 60s.
Yeah. We got to. I tried for a few of these to have like a modern comp and then hopefully a 90s comp to appeal to, because I know my audience here.
Yes.
And, But Bullet Bob was it came to mind. I was like, shit, let's look him up. I can remember some highlights. Let's see how fast Bullet Bob was. And he was really fast.
Yeah, I tweeted this to Nate earlier. Like I read an article years ago that made a pretty compelling argument that Bob Hayes like wasn't just fast, but was genuinely the fastest sprinter of all time at that point. And this was pre Usain Bolt, right?
Yeah.
But it essentially said if you adjust for, you know, era, if you adjust for cinder tracks as opposed to whatever the kind of rubber crap that they run on now is, if you spikes, all this kind of stuff, if you like just like go adjust for all those things, Bob Hayes is basically the fastest man that's ever lived. And so when you're talking about Bob Hayes on the football field, like he's not just fast or fast for the fast guys. That dude is like literally you put pads on Usain Bolt and send him out there to run a go route, right? At a time where we hadn't even invented zone coverage yet. So there was some poor stooge out there trying to cover Usain Bolt running deep down the field one-on-one. That's what Bob Hayes was. So like that dude just broke the game.
Oh, so is Jameson Williams that good? Because you just described, that's also Tyreek Hill today, right? I mean, that's Tyreek Hill plays at a different speed than the fastest players in the NFL.
And Jameson Williams, he does have literal game-breaking speed, like he does. And he's more of a receiver than I originally thought he would be, and I mean that in the sense that he knows how to use that speed. A lot of these guys that have that literal world-class speed, it's just, okay, go straight line. As soon as they get bumped by a defender, they're screwed. Yep. Or they have to break on a route, and it's like, you know, what's the kid from Mighty Ducks' his name? Ruiz that runs into the pipes every time. Like, that's what he's like. He can't stop. But, like, Jameson Williams can. He knows how to, like, kind of tempo it and change gears to fit the fourth back to fifth. And so that is why I'm more bullish on him than maybe I originally thought of him just being a straight speed guy. It's like I'd say he's okay hands, but he's not scared, even though he's a smaller guy, you know, as far as play strength wise. But he has a chance. He has a chance to be a really dynamic player, which I originally, when I first watched him, I was kind of being a hater and going like, okay, let's see this one trick pony. Yeah. But no, he's a real, real receiver.
Did you have anything? I don't know,
Bob Hayes.
No, between Bob Hayes, I was kind of, once I saw that, I was like, all right, I'm not even going to try and get one for Jameson Williams. And I like, you know, you've used the Will Fuller thing before in terms of impact, you know, the effect that he can have on a defense. I think like a healthy Will Fuller makes a lot of sense in terms of not just that production, but also that like manipulation of a coverage shell every play.
Yeah. So you said you didn't want to use DeSean Jackson, who just has that consistent, he's just a consistent deep threat that until maybe the end of his career just has made every offense better. Right. And I think Will Fuller was kind of on that path. I think I used a DeSean Jackson comp for Will Fuller when he came out, or Mike Wallace comp. So for me, this was that Mike Wallace, Will Fuller spectrum of speed receiver that you have to account for. I thought Jameson Williams fights the ball a little bit, body catches and stuff like that, a lot like a Will Fuller did coming out. And for whatever that's worth, I don't care. I want this dude on my team. I think he's a good fit for every team that I look at in the first round. I'm like, imagine Jameson Williams in this receiving core. Imagine him in this receiving core. Like, he makes everybody better because he's bringing something that only a handful of players in the NFL have. So draft Bob Hayes in the first round.
Well, that's what Robert Hayes and I said. It's like, there's never been a sports team in the history of time that said, no, we don't want speed. We no, can't have it. We don't want that on our roster. It's like, yeah, he's just going to be useful for somebody. It's gravity. I mean, that's what he has. It's like having a JJ Redick, you know. It's like this, he might be limited in other sense, like you said, with the body catching. I agree with that. But it's, shoot, he's knocking out 44% of his threes. That's going to open up a lot for everybody else, even if he doesn't take over a game. And I think that's what Jameson Williams could do in the receiving game.
In your study of receivers through the years, have you, I mean, you kind of hinted at it, right? Like, did you know that John Ross wasn't going to work out? Like, can you figure out what makes this 4-2-4-3 guy different than this 4-2-4-3 guy? I mean, it's one of those things, I think when you see it, it makes sense. Like, when I see Tyreek Hill, I'm like, I know his change of direction is really good, and he can go up and catch it when he needs to. But, like, John Ross looked crazy quick, too. I mean, his agility was insane, and you don't always get that for a guy of that speed. Is there anything that you've come to when you see the next 4-3 guy, say, that you're able to really separate those guys?
It's getting bullied. Really, that's it. It's just like, not even just getting pressed, but maybe if you're playing a more physical, you know, defensive backs, and they just get hands on you throughout your route, as far as like getting knocked off the line. And I know that kind of sounds simpler. It's like play strength, because Jameson Williams isn't that strong. Like, he tries to block, but he's taking charges when he tries to do that. But he just kind of knows how to use that core strength a little bit. And John Ross was just just smaller. And I know Jameson Williams is skinny, but just the height, size kind of deficiencies that can come up with that. That's why I always have hesitancy with maybe taking these guys top 10, just on the size, size viewpoint, because one, smaller guys get hurt more. That's just it's just a fact. It's like John Ross still could have been useful if get a better situation where he could have been taken in the early second, and he goes with a place that where he doesn't have to be the freaking guy eating all these targets. He could be more of like a role player. Jameson Williams, like, why I was actually I'm more keen on him, is that he does, like I mentioned before, does more of the receiver stuff where he's running these real route trees that it looks clean, and it's not time after time. It's not flashes, which is good that he's already has that feel for it. I thought a guy like John Ross could have been more, even though his testing was okay, his route running was a little more best on straight line stuff, even at Washington.
So if you have a 4-3 guy, you want a guy that's not going to get bullied.
Don't want to bully.
I mean, this was, remember, that was my biggest problem with Andy Isabella when we were watching his tape. It's like, he's really fast, but if anybody touches him ever, done. He's like, the ride is over. Forget it.
Game strength's important. I was going to transition smoothly there, but then you talked.
Sorry, my bad.
To the only true guaranteed quality pickup this season is Manscaped, the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. With Manscaped Performance Package 4.0, your skill position will be sleek and smooth enough for a sub-4-340. That's exactly what we're talking about
here. It is,
Support the PFF NFL podcast and head to manscaped.com. Use the exclusive code PFF at checkout for 20% off plus free shipping. Because of their ceramic blade and skin-safe technology, your nicks and snags will be reduced. And in the season of trimming the roster, Manscaped will make sure you're cutting the right players and not any important pieces to your D. Look, fellas, don't fall off our draft board. The ladies out there think long nose hair is a major turnoff. The Weed Whacker nose and ear hair trimmer is your solution. Why not use the best tools for the job here? April's draft season, but it's also Testicular Cancer Awareness Month. Manscaped has partnered with the Testicular Cancer Society to bring awareness to testicular cancer, men's health, and early cancer detection. So get 20% off and free shipping with the code PFF at manscaped.com. It's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com. Use the code PFF. Turn your Mr. Irrelevant to a first-round pick with Manscaped. Almost nailed it there. Almost got it.
Mr. Irrelevant.
He's just chuckling through the whole thing.
The artwork deployed by Manscaped on that video is pretty spectacular. The trimmer.
Yeah.
The trimmer, it's some sort of space motif, and the trimmer ends up being between two planets that have come together, forming a rather phallic package.
I see.
It's pretty impressive.
Good, like the James Bond, like the train going into the tunnel a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Ah,
there we go.
Hey, look at that. Perfect. There's some graphic designers had a lot of fun with that video. That's all I'm saying.
What's in the box? They ask.
What's in the box?
I mean, the people that make the website and write the copy have some fun.
Absolutely. Yes,
they certainly have some fun. Can we get this one through this month? Let's see.
Hell yeah, we can.
Turn your Mr.
Who's irrelevant. Gonna veto it?
Right, seriously. Don't get rid of the Nixon snacks with Manscaped. PFF's your promo code over there. All right, George Pickens, stay our last wide receiver on the group. We'll have a little free-for-all session at the end here as well. But George Pickens, Georgia wide receiver, any comp there, Nate?
This has been one of my toughest ones. And I threw out TJ Houshmandzadeh. Yeah. And I'm not like particularly like love it, but I kind of have talked myself into it a little bit. Little skinnier ball winner bully type. That's kind of how I remember Houshmandzadeh a little bit. He kind of did everything well, would have a lot of physical catch point kind of big plays like down the road, or with Carson Palmer kind of throwing it down to him, even if he wasn't like maybe the fastest of the world type of guy. But yeah, TJ Houshmandzadeh, kind of I would say undersized, but a skinnier ball winner bully. Yeah. And that's kind of what George Pickens' game is a little bit.
Houshmandzadeh to me is like the most classic prototypical possession receiver in NFL history.
Like not Anquan Boldin?
No. Like, who is possession receiver? TJ Houshmandzadeh, the end.
Yeah, he's
that's
the
it.
Guy.
He's the guy. He is it. He is the possession receiver. That's him. So to me, that's not George Pickens. To me, George Pickens...
I don't like it.
George Pickens reminded me of Javon Walker, right?
Oh.
Long, got some speed to him, vertical threat, can go up and win. Maybe has better hands than Javon Walker. Pickens has got legit hands. Like, he can make spectacular catches, doesn't drop the ball, will get, you know, has the vertical skills, may end up being more of a vertical player only in the NFL. But, like, has that legit playmaking ability, I think.
Walker, first-round pick in 2002 of the Green Bay Packers. His workouts, 4.38 40, and over the 89th plus percentile in vertical jump, broad jump, 20-yard shuttle. Freak. Absolute freak there.
Yeah.
And you love George Pickens. You're
I do.
First round George Pickens guy.
Yeah.
One comp I was excited about because I'm watching George Pickens and he's contorting his body all over. Everything just looks spectacular with George Pickens. And that reminded me of Brandon Lloyd. So I've gone Brandon Lloyd comp for George Pickens. I was excited about that one.
Yeah. One I almost passed on, but I had to put an answer in. I'm like, is that the ACTs or the SAT? SAT, you can skip, right?
You can skip the SAT. Yeah. I never took the ACT.
So, yeah, I had to put an answer in here. There's only one other one with that. So I'm fine with when as soon as Sam goes, yeah, it doesn't remind me of that. I'm like, yeah, no, yeah, me either.
Yeah, well, it's okay. You can pass. This is the SAT here. Yeah. I'm allowing you to pass if you don't feel great about it because I've passed multiple times.
Absolutely.
Here.
Most of it, in fact.
But I sprinted to the podium to hand in Brandon Lloyd.
The problem with a Brandon Lloyd comp is you need to specify, like, is it the one good year that he had?
He had more than one good year.
Or like the other years where it's like, who's that guy?
His 2010 adjusted for Tebow is like incredible.
It's like one of the greatest receiving seasons of all time.
Yeah, when you adjust for Tebow and a half a year of Kyle Orton.
But it's like, remember, you know the way like Ryan Fitzpatrick, right? Ryan Fitzpatrick fits Brandon Marshall, a dude who's just going to YOLO it down the field and go get it, right? Marshall like, gotcha. I'm just going to moss this dude, done. Tim Tebow absolutely fits Brandon Lloyd because every single pass is a yard and a half in the wrong direction across every axis. So everything, Brandon Lloyd's got to be like, whoa, like one-handed behind him.
I did go to the YouTube highlights just to confirm how good Brandon Lloyd was. And half of them are off-target Tebow passes where he's like 5 yards, yeah, stopping, going back, staying. Some of his sideline stuff is incredible. But I'm watching George Pickens contort his body and just smoothly catch the ball. And it reminded me of Lloyd. So yeah, I liked that one.
He's a fun player. He really is. I'm a fan of Pickens as well.
I was writing about him recently, and I genuinely think that like if he hadn't torn his ACL and had played all this season, he would be in the conversation for that number one receiver spot, right?
It's so much easier to talk him into that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see why, because his dominance is dominant. That's my way of putting it, because it's like, doesn't matter what the situation was, he was just dunking on guys.
Right.
And it wasn't in a sense where it's like, man, he can't separate, because he also was doing the stuff where his hand-eye coordination is ridiculous because he's diving for balls. And then the next play, he's, you know, giving somebody a rock bottom in the end zone. Like, it's just like a fun player to watch, like, because you see his competitiveness, which you don't see sometimes with receivers.
Yeah.
Speaking of rock bottom, we did suggest maybe we could get into some like if the right wrestling comp comes up, if you want to compare a you know, a player to a wrestler, and we were joking a little bit off air before that maybe Evan Neal, who's next on our list, Alabama offensive tackle, you know, it could be the it could be like Mark Henry, you know, the world's strongest man, athletic, big dude, you know, he's doing jump splits and all that stuff. And
I know,
you know,
there's a modern guy right now, and he was WWE, now he's AEW, which is what I watch more of. His name's Keith Lee, and that's who Evan Neal probably is. That's kind of like a modern Mark Henry a little bit, but Keith Lee is good. Yeah. And if you see Keith Lee, it makes sense. Keith Lee was like a football player, I want to say at Texas A&M, one of the Texas schools, and then he like retired his college career after one year because he's like, I want to be a wrestler. And it was worked out for him, all right. But he's pretty fun, you know, big hoss that can move a little bit. Surprisingly agile. So that would be my Evan Neal modern wrestling comp.
You're just trying to get a job with the Jaguars here. You know, let me do AEW and Tony right? Khan and comp and football players. I mean, Tony's going to hire you tomorrow. Did you have any football player comps for Evan Neal?
Football comp, I have two guys with the last name Brown. I have a modern one is Trent Brown, because I think of Evan Neal as maybe bumping over to right tackle and that being his ideal fit when it's all said and done. More of a big mauler who's surprisingly athletic, even though I know Evan Neal's got ridiculous testing, but just on talking about film wise. But my original, and I'm going back to the original Orlando Brown, Zeus himself. Ooh, Zeus. Cleveland Browns, Baltimore Ravens. Left tackle, Orlando Brown the first. So that would be one of my comparisons. Just, yeah, his name was Zeus for a reason, because he was 360 pounds and he looked like he was 260. And, you know, and I ended up having to wear a visor because of some unfortunate incidents with referees. So that was my memory of Orlando Brown when I was a kid.
That's one of the most absurd stories ever. For anyone that doesn't know that, like a referee – you know, the way the flag has got like a little beanbag in there so that it flies somewhere when the ref throws it. Ref pitched it and it went like through the dude's face mask and hit him in the eye.
Yeah.
Caused like permanent damage.
Threw a line drive like through his face mask, hit him in the eye. I mean, the protocol for how they throw flags has changed since that point. You have to throw it up in the air, right?
Yeah, because he just launched it to the spot, and that thing, I mean, if you want, I've watched it somewhat recently, and that thing just went right. It's one in a million shots.
It's ridiculous that happened.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. Oh, I mean, he almost killed the ref too. It's one of those. It's also a good reminder of how big and
angry offensive lineman is.
Yes, NFL offensive linemen are, because when you see him grab the ref, it's like, oh my god, he just ragdolls this grown man. It's nothing.
Yeah, that was a crazy, unfortunate incident. So I like that. The original Orlando Brown, Zeus, and Trent Brown for Evan Neal. That's enough for both of us, unless you had
an
Evan Neal one.
I don't have a good comp for Evan Neal, because I can't get past seeing him at the combine and being like, this dude is skinny. He looks like a tight end. Like, where is 340 pounds?
Is that early career Jason Peters, when he was actually like transitioning from tight ends to tackle?
And freaky athletic. I mean, that was when you were talking a little bit. Jason Peters' name did pop into my head, but that would be as close as I can get.
Yeah, he was one of the Peters is just one of the early career Peters was one of the guys I thought of, but I like where Nate went here with Trent and Orlando Brown.
Yeah, but bookended it with Browns.
Yes, perfect. And Keith Lee and Mark Henry. We've got a lot of comps here for Evan Neal. A couple of wrestling comps there. The only other offensive lineman I had on my original list here, Tyler Linderbaum, your Iowa center. What do you have for him, Nate?
I spoiled this one a little bit. I went with Jeff Christie, the old late 90s Vikings and Buccaneers offensive lineman. Linderbaum tested a lot better than Jeff Christie did. I didn't realize that. I looked up his old – he ran like a 5'2". This is also
early 90s. Yeah, that was 90s. Fast back then, though.
Yeah. This is early 90s when no one even like cared or trained for that. So Jeff Christie, people don't know, he was a converted fullback at Pitt. He was an undersized center. A couple Pro Bowls with the Vikings and Bucks, I believe. And just an athletic guy that could pull and move. He was kind of the Gen X version of what we know as Jason Kelce now. That was kind of like what Jeff Christie was back in the day. So that's why I went with Linderbaum, because I just see that kind of has a little bit of ruggedness to him with this game. And he is very, very athletic in an undersized frame.
And I went with the real version of Jason Kelce.
Yeah, Kelce.
I went with the lazy one. Because Kelce's so – he looks like a little linebacker in space.
He does, yeah.
Right? He's so fast getting out there. And I think Linderbaum's probably the best the best center to come out in a long time with that type of movement.
It's a good point, though, that, like, particularly back then, whatever about certain positions training for the combine, like an offensive lineman is not practicing, you know, he's not understanding the footwork and the starting mechanisms for the 40. Like, that dude is just, like, rolling in there, running 40 yards, and be like, oh, 5'3", fine, okay, next.
Yeah. It's all about conditioning then.
Yeah.
That's all it was. It was like, hey, get ready for the workouts, not, like, actually doing the drills. It was more like, hey, make sure your cardio is good.
So anyone, your, like, explosiveness. Yeah. Like, I think anyone you comp an offensive line to back that far, is they're going to be more athletic than that guy, because that guy, it was probably more athletic than his own testing numbers showed. Yeah. So my comp was, like, a more athletic Jeff Saturday. And if you look at Jeff Saturday's measurables in terms of height, weight, arm length, they're almost identical to Linderbaum's. Like, Saturday was 6'3", is 6'3", I guess. Playing weight, like, just a shade either side of 300. And then the arm length is short. Like, he's got under 32-inch arms, Jeff Saturday. And yet, dude was a technician, so it didn't matter.
I think those works. Yeah, yeah, Jeff
Saturday.
Christie.
Saturday's film was always fun because it was just, like, it's like, click tape. Yeah. Just how he uses his hands and everything. Just, yeah. Love a good Jeff Saturday reference.
Jeff Christie, Jason Kelsey, Jeff Saturday. Looks like Linderbaum might be a good prospect here.
Mm.
In a zone heavy scheme, of course.
Yeah.
Where he'll use his skills. All right, let's move on to defensive side of the ball. Aiden Hutchinson, of course, the subject of the PFF drama, the documentary Hutch. It's live here on YouTube. Or wherever you listen to the podcast, be sure to check out Hutch. Came out last week. And Nate, what do you have for comp for our good friend Hutch?
Yeah, Hutchinson is a unique watch because he tested. I mean, I never thought he was going to be a bad athlete. I thought he'd be more of a good athlete, but he tested like an elite athlete. And he's 6'7" with T-Rex arms, which is like just such a. I didn't realize he was 6'7" either. I thought he was like 6'4", 6'5", maybe.
Yeah, those
but,
don't make
little,
sense.
Little T-Rex arms. Yeah, what did you say?
They don't make sense. 6'7".
People, I don't think, appreciate the context in that, right? So, you know, you've got him over there who's like 6'10", allegedly. You've got you. What are you listed at? What's your list?
6'5".
6'5".
6'04 or 6'5" is NFL measurements.
So we've got two pretty tall people here. I'm 5'11". I have the same length arms as Aiden Hutchinson. And Aiden Hutchinson has 8 inches in height over me. And, like, I'm losing length by having short, like, small hands. So that is... That guy should not have the same length arms as me. It just should not happen. And not only is it like, it's such an unusual number, it's so weird that it's like, is that right? Like, did somebody screw up the measurement?
When they posted the height, I thought it was a typo. I was like, oh, no way. Like, all that. That's like me and Russell Wilson. Russ and I played at Wisconsin together, and I'm legit six inches taller than him, and his hands are an inch bigger than mine. I'm 9 and a quarter and he's like 10 and a quarter.
That's
so funny. That would always be so weird. We put our hands up and you just see him golf mine. And it's like, that must be nice. No wonder you can pump and do all that fun stuff. I'm worried about that ball squirting away every time.
So you could speak to Kenny Pickett's 8.5 inch hands maybe a little bit.
A little bit. I'm over the threshold. I'm good.
You are over the threshold for sure. I'm trying to look for players that had that big of a discrepancy.
There can't be many, right? That's so weird.
I can only find decimals. If I can get decimals here to 32.
The one I went with is a guy that has shorter arms at a good height, and that's Kyle VandenBosch.
Okay.
Because Kyle VandenBosch, I will say 6'4", 6'5", and he had 32-inch flat arms. And also surprisingly athletic. I think he ran a 4.65. Pretty athletic guy. Was feisty. Would play, you know, a little bit stiff on the outside, but a good run defender with some good pass rushing chops. So I actually, like, hadn't really been trying to find a comparison for Hutchinson, and kind of doing the exercise for this, I was actually kind of liking that with VandenBosch a little bit. Kind of tested well, but it could be a little stiff with his play, but also just good hand usage and just a good player, but has short arms for how tall he is.
That's a good one.
He is such a weird prospect, Hutchinson, because, like, the three cone time is insane. Like, his three cone is absolutely elite. You don't necessarily see, it doesn't jump off the tape at you when you're watching it. And then you have this, like, incredible height, which usually correlates to length, you know, but he doesn't because he's got tiny little T-Rex arms. You're like, well, what the? Like, I don't understand. This is not a normal composite of skills and attributes that you can immediately go, well, that's exactly the same as this player.
So the guy I found was Michael Johnson. Bengals, Georgia Tech.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
First round caliber player who goes in the third round, had some pretty good years, but he was 6'7", 266, 32.5-inch arms.
Hmm. Okay.
But he didn't have the three cone. He didn't have the change of direction. He was really good on anything, straight line or burst-wise.
He also has – so you know the way some people are 6'7", like Hutchinson. Hutchinson's 6'7", and it's all in proportion. Michael Johnson is 6'4", but he has a 6'7" neck.
Ah.
Like, look up a picture of Michael Johnson.
The Glennon.
That's a 6'4" man who has a neck. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. That's a 6'4" man who has a neck that makes him 6'7".
This is why we did the body type analysis. I always mentioned the teammate who was like, I was like 8 inches taller than him, but we had like the same size torso. Like, we'd be sitting next to each other at dinner, and he, you know, he's just a long torso guy. Have different body types.
I'm long limbed. I'm long legged. Yeah. So like, that for me, when I sit down, people always go, "Oh, you're right. I knew you're tall, but you're even taller." Yeah. It's like,
seriously.
I also hunch, which doesn't help at all either.
Michael Johnson is a 6'4" man.
He's showing me his neck. Over neck. Here.
Hang on. Can we get this on there?
Yeah.
That's not a neck.
Yeah, you can see it from here.
When you can see it that far away.
Yeah.
That's not a normal neck.
It's that picture of Drew Brees when he's getting tackled.
Yes.
Neck is all the way over there. Yeah. The other one that's going to be on the neck all-star team is Davis Mills.
Yes. Davis Mills, yeah.
But he's got, like, his isn't just, there's girth to Davis Mills' neck. It's like Davis Mills' neck is a cross between Mike Glennon and Takeo Spikes.
Oh, yeah, there it is. If Takeo Spikes and Mike Glennon,
Bobby Lashley.
If their necks had a baby.
Right, that's Davis Mills.
Oh, funny. This is why we do this show.
We're getting off the rails now.
I've seen Chris Long for Hutchinson comp, another guy. I did not have a good one, but I saw.
Yeah.
I also saw yours in the spreadsheet. And I'm waiting for this explanation.
Adewale Ogunle.
Oh, yeah.
You see? You don't like it?
I have no idea what he measures at. So that's why I'm trying to remember what he measures.
I think he was like 6'5", 6'6", 265, 270.
Yeah.
He's like in the same ballpark. He appears to be very, like, I Googled it quickly. He seems to be very low on numbers, period, measurements. Like, it's almost like he just drifted in from nowhere, and we never got a testing of him anywhere. He just started playing in the NFL one day. We're like, all right, fine. There's another one. It works. It seems to be functioning. Let's roll with it. But, I can't find a 40 time. I can't find arm length. I can't find anything other than just the NFL-listed height and weight.
We don't have anything, do we?
I like that.
Why the cost?
I mean, he fits it. He fits the broad prototype in terms of size. I think he played a sort of similar style in terms of he was good, athletic enough, but didn't like that three cone thing, like the fact that he ran, I didn't see that on tape, you know, and that felt like a good lay. He was like an athletic guy, but didn't like you didn't look
had
at him
one
and
or
go,
two pretty good years,
yeah, and you didn't
you're not
you
seeing the Von Miller
play. Yeah,
and
you're not like
guys.
That's freakish, you know. Yeah, he's clearly athletic, but we're not getting mind blown with what he's doing right now.
All right,
I always say that for guys. I'll say he's a good athlete, but not an overwhelming athlete.
Yeah.
Like we're talking about with Pickett as a scrambler. It's like, he's not a bad athlete. It's just that he's not an overwhelming athlete where it's like that, you know, stands out every time you watch him.
I like that Vander Bosch comp he came up with as well, though. That works too. Sam, yours is interesting for this next one. Kayvon Thibodeau is next. Oregon edge defender. What do you have here, Nate?
I got two here. I got Javon Kearse, the original freak, and I didn't realize how much their height, weight, speed kind of aligned. They're very, you know, testing numbers and everything. Kind of had up it. Kearse, you know, hit rookie year as one of the best, you know, rookie year pass rushing years ever, but kind of had an up and down effort as his career went along. And what does that sound like? A little bit of Thibodeau. The other one is I had KGB from the Packers. As far as another guy, as far as how they're built, how they play a little bit, up and down play, also just like a good run defender with some flashes. As a pass rusher, even in a kind of a not overwhelmingly bulky frame. I think KGB was like in the high 240s during his career, and Kearse was like mid 250s, which I think Thibodeau will probably weigh or is going to weigh it for his career. So those are the two guys I went with that as far as body type and also play style.
I don't hate Kearse. Kearse is a decent one. What was Kearse's, the original freak, what was his, what were his like movement measurables like? Was he a fluid athlete? I don't really remember him in terms
they only had the shuttle on him. He was a 4.24 shuttle guy, so it wasn't, you know, it's good, you know, good. He ran a 4.58 40, which is, and I think that Thibodeau was right 4.56 4.57 somewhere around there.
We've also
and then of course this is the burst that, you know, Kearse had 37 inch for just over 10 foot broad. So
like,
but that's, yeah, 6'5", 262 at the combine. So that's a little bit, that's near Thibodeau.
I think generally we've gotten a lot more sophisticated in terms of understanding what numbers are important for specific positions. Whereas back when Curse was coming out, it was like, oh, if you run a fast 40 and have a big jump, you're a freak.
You're good.
It doesn't actually matter if you have the turning circle of a barge. Like, that's irrelevant, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not saying he did. I'm just saying that, like, even if he had, nobody would have given a crap.
Yeah.
Yeah, Thibodeau does have. The thing with Curse
that I remember when he came in, it was everyone would talk about how small he was because he was only 250.
Right.
Because that's when all those DNs were, you know, 280, yeah, thumping guys. So, like, I just remember that. That was always the talk with him. It's like, oh, he's a little bit undersized. Now I look at his measurables now, and I'm like, 6'5", 260 is undersized. It's like, what? God, those guys were some big bodies in the late 90s.
Oh, man, but those must have all been. I mean, those are all like 88th, 90th percentile in our database right now. But that had to be close to like 98th and 99th percentile. Like, we weren't seeing those types of numbers from defensive ends, edge rush, whatever you want to call them at that time.
Yeah.
I like that. Curse, huh? Yeah, Thibodeau does have similar numbers there from a testing standpoint.
Yeah.
What do you have for Thibodeau comps here?
This is right in Nate's wheelhouse. I had Brian Robinson, who was another one of these guys who was like a freaky athlete. That dude's testing was off the charts, and particularly when it came to explosion. Like, he had a 40-plus inch vertical. His straight line stuff was insane. He had a really good three-cone time as well. But, again, another guy that I never quite saw that on the field, which reminds me a little bit of Thibodeau, whose straight line explosion is nuts. He's got some really good kind of change of direction laterally, but the bend, the arc thing that Von Miller, you know, is the prototype for, that's where I think he struggles.
All right. I'm trying to confirm, because this is another one of those, like, last summer, I'm not changing my initial.
I swear to God, you misremember this player.
Not according to the workout numbers. I thought, so I picture Trent Cole as an undersized edge defender who just kind of overachieved, you know, and our combine numbers have him at 6'2", 236. I don't know if that's off. I know his list weight was like 6'2", 260.
6'3", 270 is his list.
That's not really what he was. He's an undersized overachiever. That's what Trent Cole is. That's what he is. Okay. I'm sticking to it. But I'm watching Thibodeau, like, kind of jack up blockers and just the way he plays. And I thought the high-effort plays from Thibodeau did remind me a little bit of Trent Cole, if you want to say he's got effort issues like people are talking about around the league. I'm talking about his high-end plays reminded me of Trent Cole. And that was my initial impression, and I refused to come off of it.
Apparently,
And I'm firing up some Trent Cole highlights right now just to see.
Just to bask in it.
Just to see if I'm that crazy.
I was pretty fired up when I saw the Curse measurables actually kind of aligning. I was like, oh, okay, this actually feels a lot more, because it was like when Curse was on early on, it was like, oh, wow. And then, but it was just, that's what happened with his career. He kind of had, you wouldn't hear from him for a couple of games and all that. So it's kind of sound like a familiar narrative a little bit.
So let's transition to Trayvon Walker then from a comp standpoint, because I also want to know, like, where do you have these guys as far as players in rankings? Is it Hutchinson number one? Where do you have Kayvon Thibodeau? Where do you have Trayvon Walker? And what do you make of this Trayvon Walker number one overall discussion?
Yeah, I still have Thibodeau one, but that's just kind of this is another one I would change my mind every day. But I do have Thibodeau one because I'm going to the flash a little bit and hoping that he gets in a situation where they kind of ease him in or really know what his expectations are. As far as Walker, I understand the argument for him. In a draft that seems to be full of doubles, he's the home run swing. You're hoping you get that Danielle Hunter. Holy shit. And that's my comparison, by the way, is Danielle Hunter. But you're hoping to get that kind of body type, athleticism. Okay, he just hasn't truly figured it out. We'll get him where we're going to let him go straight line and use that and just be more consistent with that. I would like Walker more in the teens than a top five pick. I understand that argument, but that's just, whew. It's a lot of ifs, you know, a lot of ifs have to hit. And then as far as Hutchinson's another guy, like I said, a draft full of doubles, where I do think he's a good prospect. I do think he's a good athlete. I think he's going to be a good, useful player, but maybe not a guy I see as a top five guy. So it's kind of, for me, I'm grading to that flash of Thibodeau, but I always keep coming back to it. It's like, thank God I'm not picking number one in this draft, or, you know, I'm in charge of any of those teams, because that it's a draft that you want to trade down in.
I'm also Danielle Hunter as my comp, right? And and part of it is the athleticism, the body type is similar, but also from a PFF standpoint, it's like it's in our contract. You're supposed to talk about Trayvon Walker's lack of production and how he shouldn't go top five. That's what everyone's talking about here at PFF because the numbers are just so clear, but they also match what Hunter had coming out of LSU. Now, Hunter, I thought, was an excellent run defender. I think Walker has flashes there, but the pass rush production just wasn't there, snap for snap. So from a production, body type, athleticism standpoint, there's a lot of similarities with Hunter.
Yeah. To me, he's like, you know, you start off Madden, you create a player, right? And you get a finite number of attributes, and you got to decide where they're going, where the points are going. Everything's been plugged into the physical, right? The size, the weight, the length, the speed, the explosion, the three-cone time. Like, he is the perfect physical specimen for a modern edge rusher. Now, and the difference being, it's not that the other attributes are all zero, like he's the worst football player ever. It's just that there's a question mark over all of them. So all of the attributes have been plugged into the physical stuff, and we have no earthly idea what he actually is as a player until we put him into an NFL offense, and he has to have, like, the same role as everybody else.
Yeah. It's like he's a 65 overall, but superstar developmental.
Yeah.
Like that.
Modern Madden.
Yeah.
That's before I had four kids. I'd be up, you know, up to speed on what Madden's doing right now. You get that potential rating. Like
5 years.
That's Trayvon Walker right now. All right, how about Jermaine Johnson on the edge? Another edge defender where maybe the yearly production doesn't necessarily match up with top 15 player.
Yeah, and I actually didn't realize this guy was a Minnesota boy in high school either. He went to Eden Prairie, which is one of the rivals I went to Edina, the Cake Eaters. So this was my other one for the SAT where I almost passed on the answer. But I ended up finding this one, and I like it more. I went with Trey Flowers, and just as far as, you know, a little bit of undersized, if that, like, how he plays doesn't really match his body type. I would say good hand usage. I think he's just more good and solid at everything. I just didn't, the older prospect as well. But it just maybe not plays the athleticism all the time, but I just think he's a solid player. Another guy that I think should be a second half of the first round guy that I understand his play numbers and everything is pretty good. I think he's more of a useful player than a true star, which I think that's what kind of Trey Flowers is a little bit.
I love Trey Flowers. I mean, Trey Flowers' hand usage and power. I mean, just your power edge, right?
A
power.
It's like 260, but he plays like he's 300 almost. Yeah. Like just pop.
I didn't want to answer this either, but so I answered it similarly, but also different, right? So the type of player that I remember, Jarrett Johnson.
I like
right.
That.
Who is? But he's 285 pounds. He plays like a power edge defender.
But Jarrett Johnson is also like one of the best edge setting. Edge defenders ever. Like that, you could not run the ball to his side of the field because the run would not progress beyond Jarrett Johnson. Like he would just jack whoever the tight end or the tackle was coming out to get him, and that run was dead in the water at that point on.
Yeah.
The edge setter.
Yeah. So it's the run stopping edge setter with probably some question marks, maybe consistently rushing the passer. I think that's where I would go with Jermaine Johnson there. We got some big interior defensive linemen, the two dudes from Georgia, Jordan Davis and then Devontae Wyatt. You have a good one for Jordan Davis? Ever seen anything like him?
John Henderson.
There it is.
I think it's the easy one. Big, you don't see 6'6", 6'7", nose tackles. You know, they don't grow on trees. And a guy, especially that can move like that, they're also, you know, tested like that. And I think it's John Henderson. I think that's what he probably end up being, just a big plugger, pushing the pocket. Just some almost like we'll say a mauler for offensive guards, but just a mauler at defensive tackle or nose tackle. And that's why I just see him with the same kind of tier as John Henderson. I like Jordan Davis. I know some of the pass rush and stuff and the rep stuff, but it's one of those guys where it's like he's going to be useful for somebody. It's just that you have to have the expectations and use them how you should be used.
We caught the tail end of John Henderson's career from a grading standpoint. He was drafted in 2002, sorry, that was Stroud in 01, but we got John Henderson's grading since 06. He was a better run defender than a pass rusher. I mean, he was difficult to move and a mauler, right? He just destroyed people that tried to block him. I think that is, I mean, that's where I would go as far as comp. I know you've mentioned him before as well, Sam.
Yeah, and I love the fact that Jordan Davis himself brought up John Henderson.
That's right.
At the combine.
That's cool.
I thought that was phenomenal. The fact that he even knows who John Henderson is, I think, is an outstanding sign.
Because the slap in the face videos, right? Historically, probably. John Henderson.
Honestly, probably is, but whatever. He said he was grinding John Henderson tape. That's all I need to hear. He's a weird player, though, to me, and I kept getting like little pieces of specific players that would remind, like, not one complete composite. So Henderson's definitely one that works. You reminded me a lot of Alan Branch, you know, the old Michigan defensive tackle. Where else did he play in the NFL? The Patriots for a while. A guy that, like, just is this huge body, like 330 plus, long. But Branch, I always felt, was like a three technique who never got the opportunity to play it because they're just like, you're 330, you're playing nose tackle, the end. Like, you know, be happy with it. Just go out there and get it done. But I think he was, like, miscast in that role. And then Vince Wilfork, in terms of, like, that's the impact that he should be able to have as a pass rusher, right? Like, Vince Wilfork was a freaking bust by the end of his career, but he could just, like, stand up, lean on a dude, and, like, push him 6 yards into the backfield.
Yeah.
Like,
there's no reason. He didn't have anywhere to step up. Yeah.
Like, Jordan Davis has 30 pressures in 4 years. There's no reason that he shouldn't be able to do the Vince Wilfork job of just collapsing the front of the pocket forward by 6 yards.
Yep. Yeah, don't let him step up, and hopefully he's paired with a good edge rusher that just, like, eats on it because the quarterback can't step up.
How about his teammate, Devontae Wyatt, completely different player than Jordan Davis?
Yeah, and this was – I didn't have a great one. I did see some Tommy Harris to his game. Ooh. As far as that kind of, you know, three-tech kind of, you know, shooter. And just build-wise, they kind of are built the same, kind of that box build like that, you know, Tommy Harris had. And I actually didn't even look up what Tommy Harris measured at or anything. That was just kind of like a quick glance at him and just – or what I've seen from him and just remembering somewhere in my vague recesses of my mind what Tommy Harris played and looked like. So, yeah, I went with Tommy Harris. And that's more body type and maybe a little bit of the play style as far as, like, a shooter.
Yeah, I went with Kawan Short as my comp here. That was one that just, you know, sometimes they just click. I felt good about that one because of the, you know, the times that Devontae Wyatt is able to penetrate into the backfield. He'll get crushed by double teams at other times, you know, but the highlight reel – I mean, Kawan Short had some really good years for the Panthers where he was one of the better interior penetrators from multiple positions along the defensive line. So I like that comp for me for Devontae Wyatt.
He reminded me a little bit of like a slightly smaller version of Kevin Williams, you know, similar. I think he's good.
Back to the Vikings.
Yeah, good at the same things as Kevin Williams. He's a little bit shorter. He's a little bit less or has a little bit less length, a little bit less weight, I think, as well than Kevin did. But it's like, you know, the way we've said before, James Cook is like Dalvin Cook photocopied at 80% across the board, right?
there's James Cook,
the Diet Coke version.
Yeah, like Devontae Wyatt is like Kevin Williams was photocopied at like 90%, right? He's almost there across the board.
There we go. I like it. All right, we got a few more to get through. I'm going to maybe skip one or two here as we're getting tight on time. But Devin Lloyd, Utah linebacker. By the way, because he did line up as an edge defender a little bit at Utah and had some success, we're already getting, well, he's the next Micah Parsons. And I cannot reiterate enough that Micah Parsons does not show up
every
year or even every 20 years because it's just you don't have guys that have those two skill sets. But Devin Lloyd had some success as a pass rusher, but he's your traditional linebacker.
Yeah, when you have a rookie defensive player being like, oh, yeah, no one's really done this since LT, you know. That's
draft the next one next year. Don't worry about it.
That's literally once in a generation. Once in a generation means about 20 years, people, like that. Not once every five or once every three. Devin Lloyd was a weird watch for me, but I went with Shaq Thompson as far as I haven't just body type as well and like how he's built, but also play wise, I haven't seen he gets what's trying to be done. I think he's learning to how to like throw his hands and actually be that physical player that Shaq Thompson. Shaq Thompson was a hybrid player, you know, early on in his career. Now that he's been a full-time linebacker, especially last year, he got really unlocked to be able to work in the blitz scheme that they did with Phil Snow did in Carolina. But I'm going with that as far as just run, even just how he runs. It reminds me a little bit of Shaq Thompson.
Yeah, like Shaq Thompson was just a like high-level coverage first type of player who kind of, you know, did have to get used to playing traditional linebacker for sure.
I will say that Devin Lloyd's reps as a pass rusher, like a true edge rusher, they're kind of nuts.
Oh, they're good. I don't want to downplay the success there.
Yeah.
He had a lot of success off the edge, but Micah Parsons stepped in was like a top five pass rusher.
No, I agree.
This
year.
So
I mean,
don't
look,
do
when,
that.
When you're
all pro candidate.
Yeah. When you're making comparisons from a rookie to LT and they're not crazy, you know?
Yeah.
that immediately is, okay, yeah, we're talking some pretty weird, rarefied air right now. So the chances of Devin Lloyd doing that again the next season are pretty minimal. But when I turn on his tape and I'm like, oh, look, we're lining up on the edge here. I wonder what happens here. Oh, like how is he beating a tackle like that, like a drum as an edge rusher? It was pretty impressive. That being said, ignore that, because the player he reminded me of was Donnie Edwards, who I don't think ever lined up on the edge or did anything as a legitimate pass rusher on the perimeter. But like Donnie Edwards, just this capable, really sort of high-level inside linebacker that understood how to play the game, was good in coverage, had that kind of lanky frame, even though he wasn't that long and that large. But I don't know, I just kind of got Donnie Edwards vibes out of his game.
So I kind of cheated and went through this like mythical player that I wanted. So I went with Devin Lloyd Compe is what I wanted Akeem Ayers to be. Remember the 2011 second round pick out of UCLA, Akeem Ayers. He was 6'3", 254, 33-inch arms. He ran 4'7". So like a lot of similar body type. And Ayers actually lined up as an edge defender on third down at UCLA. It was a reasonable pass rusher, and I thought he'd be this great three down all around linebacker, and in my head Akeem Ayers was going to be great, and he had like one or two good years. But what I thought Akeem Ayers was going to be, that's what I think of Devin Lloyd.
Maybe they're all long torsoed. I think we already talked about that, but maybe I think that's what it is, those comparisons, like I can picture the body type. So yeah. I don't know. Maybe that's what it is.
Ayers looked like such a baller in his UCLA uniform and all that stuff, like everything about it.
And that's what it feels like Donnie Edwards was as well. This kind of longer, but that's it wasn't actually that long. Just maybe that was what it was, the long torso.
It's a long torso guy. All right. Do you have a great one for Derek Stingley? Because I don't think Sam and I either had one. Do you have one you love?
I went Marcus Trufant with him. Okay. I love Stingley. I think he's a stud, but I didn't want to put the Patrick Peterson or Champ Bailey on him. I'm trying to avoid doing that to anyone. Marcus Trufant. That's kind of like the mid-level comp.
Original Trufant. I like it.
The original Trufant. That's a good one. We didn't have a great one over here. Trent McDuffie, cornerback out of Washington.
I want Kareem Jackson. Okay. Short-armed, smarter player, kind of does everything okay. That smart play style with short arms, that's going with him. Because I was going to say Antoine Winfield Sr., but he doesn't tackle like that. No one does in that kind of frame. But I'm going to go Kareem Jackson with him.
No, not too many people deserve the Winfield comp. That's what I used for Tyrann Mathieu coming out, actually.
Yeah.
Off air, we did say, who's the Marty Jannetty of the draft? And I said Trent McDuffie. He just dances around. He probably jumps off the top rope. I mean, that's what he does.
How many people listening to this podcast do you think have any idea who Marty Jannetty is?
Of course. Our demographic. I got my buddy Mike who's listening. He definitely knows.
One.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Nate, he's listening.
Us three. Right? That's four.
Yep. There's at least a few more.
Okay.
Email us at nflpodcast@pff.com. Leave a comment to
Shawn Michaels of this draft class. That's how we narrow it down.
Yeah, who's Shawn Michaels? Who would turn on Trent McDuffie?
Well, that's what we couldn't figure out.
Throw him through the glass.
And who's the Bruce? Yeah, who's the butcher? Bruce Beefcake.
Steve's the facilitator.
Yeah,
right?
There you go.
So Steve can host.
I'm Brutus Beefcake.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. You're strutting and cutting.
And then somebody needs to roll
in
there.
Austin Gale is the interviewer.
And then somebody needs to roll in and drop kick Trent McDuffie through the window over there. It's perfect.
Trent McDuffie, the Marty Jannetty. If you're too young to know Marty Jannetty, just Google it, but fine. I think the people know. Let us know in the comments below. That's how we go viral.
Oh, okay. Perfect.
I went with maybe Troy Hill as a Trent McDuffie comp, a guy that's a little bit better in zone than man. Good, solid corner. I think McDuffie could be better, though.
I don't like this comp because it's too... There's too many things about it that make me think it's just my brain playing tricks on me, right? Same school... So he reminded me a lot of Byron Murphy, which I don't like.
Because, same school scouting.
Right, because the same school, Byron Murphy didn't become this great player, even though we really liked him coming out, and he's sort of underwhelmed, maybe because of the size deficiencies and stuff. There's just too many things that make me think that my brain has just constructed that, as opposed to it's actually a comp that makes sense. But I was getting Byron Murphy flashbacks when I was watching him play.
Your head cannon.
Yeah.
You're like, this is Byron Murphy. Right. Yeah. Everything starts aligning a little bit.
Yeah.
It's okay. I mean, you try to not force the same school stuff, but sometimes it happens.
And I usually don't. Well, that's why it feels wrong, but it was who I was getting reminded of.
Yeah.
So Kareem Jackson, Troy Hill, Byron Murphy, Marty Jannetty. That's your Trent McDuffie. Ahmad Gardner, the sauce. Got a good one for him?
My modern one would be Darius Slay, and that's just because the skinny, long build. But I also, because he's built so uniquely for the corner position, there was this guy for the Broncos in the early 2000s. I don't know if you guys remember him. Holy shit, I didn't write his name down. But he was 6'4", 190 pounds. I looked this up this morning because I was so proud. I remember this guy.
So excited about this.
I had it. Hold on. This guy was like 6'4", 190. He ended up playing, Lenny Walls.
Oh yeah,
Lenny BC. Walls, Boston and that College. Is like, but that is who he's built like.
You're just going body type Sauce, comp.
Yes, right. Sauce is a much better player or prospect at the very least because Lenny Walls went undrafted. but as far as that tall, lanky, almost built like a rail but plays tough. Yeah, that's kind of like what the play style went with for Slay. But then as far as just like build and everything, yeah, it's the Lenny Walls, which is a throwback. He played in the league for like. He started 25 games in his career, so I'm not going to say I think Sauce is a way better prospect than that.
So all you needed to say was Darius Slay and Lenny Walls' body. That's all we needed to. There we go. I like that, Lenny Walls.
Yeah, I love that. I think Austin Gale had this comp, and it's the one of the ones that he had that I didn't hate. Right? He's put out like a million comps this draft season. This is one of like three that I don't think are terrible. He was competent to Nnamdi Asamoah, Scrabble. Right? That was his nickname. I don't hate that as a comp. Scrabble had that long build, but was physical with it as well. I don't think they play quite the same style, quite the same way, but...
I get it, though.
Yeah, I don't... That's not the worst comp in the world I've seen.
Yeah.
When totally I was watching, I was going to go with souped-up Rasul Douglas. So a better... I don't love it, but Rasul Douglas's body type with the size and like that's the size and length, but he's faster than Douglas. I think he's better in press than Douglas. I mean, he's a better player, so souped up Rasul Douglas is what I'll go with for Sauce Gardner. And at least Rasul's coming off his best season.
So yeah, it's exactly.
Not as insulting. Yeah, he was good.
Not my one for a guy that started 25 games in his career.
It's a very different comp now than it was a year ago.
Yeah. I'm more willing to use it now because I like Sauce Gardner. Do you have – you love Derek Stingley. Is Stingley definitely your one, and is Sauce number two?
Yeah, both of them legit first-round grades, easy lottery pick grades like on both of them. But I prefer Stingley a little bit more. But yeah. I think Sauce is a good prospect in his own right.
I agree on both players there. All right, the last one that we had on our – before we go free-for-all, Kyle Hamilton, a unique player. So did we get anything for Kyle Hamilton, the Notre Dame safety?
I unfortunately went same school scouting here, and I went with Harrison Smith. And, yeah, just not the fastest guy, but big and smart and could do it all. Overcomes the top end speed because he anticipates so well. I forgot that, Harrison Smith was a Golden Domer. So I kind of was like, dang it. So if I bookend it with the Keyshawn Johnson USC comparisons now with
Harrison Smith. That's good though. Like if you forgot that it was a thing, it means you weren't like, you weren't led down that way the way I might have been with Byron Murphy.
Yeah. Once you're like beyond the first couple of years too, it's okay. I mean, that was a decade ago for Harrison Smith. So
yeah.
I think that's probably the cleanest one, right? I mean, just a guy. That's the closest one that I would come up with as well for Kyle Hamilton, just because I like him. I think he's going to be a good player. Harrison Smith has been one of the best safeties in the NFL for the majority of his career, and I think Hamilton absolutely has that ability.
Yeah,
Sam, what you got here?
Freaky guy.
I came up with Kerry Rhodes, who.
Oh, nice.
And one of the reasons was because Kerry Rhodes was always so much freaking bigger than he played like. Like, he was a coverage sort of specialist type of player, but he was like 6'3", 220. He was huge and wasn't a physical presence as much as you think he should be at that size. And that's kind of how I feel with Kyle Hamilton. Like, he's making all these crazy small-bodied safety coverage plays, but he's like 6'3", 225. It fit is basically what I'm saying.
We had him at 6'3", 209 in his workout, so big safety. Who also ran a 4.56 right in that, at least Kyle Hamilton's peak.
Kerry Rhodes,
yeah. 6'3", 209, 4.56 with a 98th percentile vertical jump of 42 inches. So that's like, same thing with Hamilton. Like, our combine analysis of him is positive, even though most people have talked about the 40 times being slow and the pro day time being terrible. The explosion numbers and everything with Hamilton are there. So you can kind of see some of those similarities between him and Kerry Rhodes as far as workouts go.
I like that one.
Nice.
Yeah, Kerry Rhodes, man. I haven't heard that name in a while.
No. That was a good one. That was one of the last ones I came up with, and I actually like that now that I think about it.
I did too.
When was he dropped?
Exactly, how you describe it, I get exactly what you mean. I haven't thought about that name in a while. So I didn't realize, that's another 05. Guy I didn't realize how big he was.
Yeah,
like, drafted in 05. By the way, he was one of the better, let's see, value ranking in WAR. First, third, fourth, 29th, and then his last year he was 8th. That's Kerry Rhodes' career,
yeah.
By the way.
He was really good PFF for a long time.
He's a very useful player, which matters, especially now.
And yeah, like you said, like every time I saw his sort of size, it was like, really? What? They could do 6'3", 220, like 210, 215?
I had no idea that until right now. That's crazy. I thought he was like 6 foot, 195.
Right.
He didn't play like that at all.
Yeah.
No.
Harrison Smith and Kerry Rhodes. I like that for Kyle Hamilton. All right, Nate, I'll let you go whatever you want. Any just great okay. comps that you enjoyed during this entire draft cycle here?
Okay, so I got a couple that I'm pretty proud of. So I went Rashad White from Arizona State. I went with a different Minnesota Vikings back, and Ontario Smith, ooh, the Wizinator.
Wizinator. Yes.
I went with him, big bodied, good back, got some twitch to him. I'm a big fan of Rashad White. Justin Ross, I went with Chris Henry. Remember Chris Henry from West Virginia with the Bengals a little bit? Had stuff happen. But he's, twitchy, like, couldn't really put it together, but had some stuff to him. But yeah, Chris Henry actually reminded me a lot of him.
I like that.
Jahan Dotson, I went with Tyler Lockett. I think they play bigger than their size, 3-level route runner. Great hands. I really like that one. Calvin Austin went with Taylor Gabriel. Just a undersized but better receiver. You wish that he was 6 foot, 190 pounds, because, you know, just because they're football players. Tyquan Thornton from Baylor went with Ashley Lalee.
Nice.
I was pretty happy with that one. I went and watched back some Ashley Lalee, and I was like, oh, yeah, that's how I remember you. Greg Dulcich, tight end from UCLA. I went with Jared Cook. That is their long-legged, long speed guys. They're not bad blockers, but it's like sometimes their length almost gets in the way because they can't get underneath how you want them to. But I like that. Like, they're wise, but they're really F tight ends because they're such good athletes. And then this is a random one. Grant Calcaterra, who's a tight end from SMU. He's a transfer from Oklahoma. I wanted Jacob Tammy for him. That was one of my kind of like mid-level football player comparisons middle-class comparisons.
Jacob Tammy. When you know. With a comp,
yes.
With a comp standpoint. So Ashley Lalee.
That's a great one.
2002 first rounder for the Denver Broncos. You're pulling out all sorts of early 2000s Broncos here. The Calvin Austin, Taylor Gabriel one, we discussed that in the podcast because we were trying to find people that receivers that small who played on the outside, right? And Taylor Gabriel is one of the few that had done it and at least had some success in the NFL level.
And it's pretty close in terms of, like, so Taylor Gabriel, almost exactly the same size, 5'8". He's 167 as opposed to 170, so basically the same. And like Calvin Austin, he offsets that a lot with all the explosion and speed measures being really high. So 4.4 flat, not the fastest in the world, but the 20-yard split is 99th percentile, 10-yard split, 93rd percentile, vertical 40-inch jump, 94th percentile. Now, what's interesting is those are not quite where Calvin Austin is. Like, he's 95th plus. And I've been thinking about this recently with Trayvon Walker as well. Like, is there actually mileage in, like, the last 5%? You know what I mean? Like, the way that PFF grades get harder to achieve the higher up the scale you get, you know, like the difference between 98 and 99 is way bigger than the difference between, you know, 78 and 79. I wonder if there's something to that in freaky athletic terms, where, you know, is being a 99th percentile athlete in these things actually important relative to just being 90th or 93rd or whatever?
Like, it weighs more the higher you get.
Yeah, like, is the fact that Calvin Austin is basically ridiculous at all those things important relative to a guy like Taylor Gabriel? Like, does that raise his ceiling any, or is it just, I mean, they're both 90th percentile plus athletes in terms of speed, quickness, twitchiness, and that's great, but it probably doesn't offset being 5'8", 170.
Yeah, Calvin Austin's weird for me because he breaks a lot of my rules, and I'm always going to gravitate towards the bigger receivers. Just, I'm a sucker for ball winner types, and I wanted to hate him. And I watched him, and I was like, he's just good. Yeah. Like, he's just a good player. And if Tutu Atwell goes in the late second, Calvin Austin, like, you know, it's like, he's a much better football player than Tutu Atwell.
Agreed. It's a good point on Atwell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that he was a weird watch, but in a good way, where I was like, man, you're a real receiver. You're just tiny. That's it.
I like Nate hearing you say, I wanted to believe this one thing, but you watch the film and, you know, change your mind, you know, based on, you had some preconceived notions, but you were able to, you know, move off those potentially. That is tough to do sometimes.
It is. I'm stubborn. So we'll see. Those are just the ones I'm willing to admit at this point in time.
Sam, did you have any other comps you just want to throw out there that were good?
No, I mean, we've covered most of the ones I think that have jumped to mind over the course of this. Bailey Zappe being thick Case Keenum, Sky Moore being it reminded me a lot of Julian Edelman in his footwork and a lot of what he does, the toughness. Yeah. Those kind
of
things.
How he beats press?
Yeah. I think that's actually quite a clean one. He might end up being as good or even a better player than that. But that's who he was.
So Sky Moore, Hall of Famer.
And you wouldn't let me say that that my guy, I've lost his name, Cole Kelly, was fat Josh Allen. You wouldn't let me say it.
I mean, you just said it, so I guess you can.
I know. I mean, I didn't listen to you, but you objected to fat. Fat Josh Allen.
Don't you disobey your mom. I'm in charge of this. I'm going to turn this car around, Sam.
Yeah, well, you know.
You keep saying that.
I'm just – you watch this game and tell me I'm wrong. That's all I'm saying.
Fat Josh Allen for Cole Kelly. The only other ones I had, Roger McCreary. I had Steven Nelson at corner. Oh. Josh Pascal. I went Devin Kennard. Just going to be a good old-school Sam linebacker that doesn't exist anymore in today's NFL. So, like a half-edge, you know, edge setter. Brian Robinson, I have no idea. The Alabama running back. I was feeling late career Sammy Morris with Brian Robinson. He's going to be that goal line back, and, you know, he's just gonna get some yards, but not enough. Sammy Morris.
I did with him. I felt like I... No, I either went with him or with Latavius Murray for him, I think.
I can see that.
Yeah, I can see that too.
Yeah, I think I even said it in it, like late career Latavius. Yeah, late career. Latavius Murray. My other Robinson combo was Carson Strong and Trevor Siemian. I was pretty proud of that one.
Oh, that's just pretty good.
Carson Strong, Trevor.
Yeah, like
a little bit of athlete, but knows what the hell he's doing every play. Like, he knows what he is.
Good arm.
Like in a good way and a bad way.
Right.
Pierre Strong. Running back, so I was looking at his measurables and I'm watching the way he plays, and I actually went to mock draftable, and one of the top comps was Felix Jones, the Arkansas running back. I was like, yes, I'm in on that one.
He runs
like Felix Jones. Like he's gonna be a home run hitter, but not. I don't know if he's physical enough and all that.
Trips himself sometimes randomly, but like but yes. get him a lane and he just.
Though that just that one play I described to you earlier immediately invalidates Felix Jones as a comp. Like Felix Jones never makes that play. Felix Jones.
The one where he had everybody weaving in the secondary. Yeah. I don't know if you remember that one.
There was an amazing play. I don't even remember who the hell it was against, but he broke through to the second level. And you know, remember that play that's in Barry Sanders highlights all the time where he turns like a defensive back like inside and out about four times?
Twice, yeah.
Without ever touching him, right?
Just
goes back into his blind spot two or three times and the guy just like spins in a circle and falls over. Like Pierre Strong did that to two different defensive backs for 50 yards worth of space. Like, he gets through to the second level and then gains another 50 by just, like, running into these guys' blind spots the whole way. Felix Jones never does that. Felix Jones would have found the spot between the two of them and just run as fast as he could in that exact straight line until somebody tackled him.
When you watch an FCS guy or any small school guy, you're like, this guy better look like the best player on the field. That's, like, assured me when I watched Pierre Strong. It was because he was ripping off 10 yards of pop. It was good. This is like the high end version. I would never do this to a guy, but a little bit of Robert Smith to his game. A little bit of a little bit kind of that, you know, just a little bit to his game is a little bit of that Robert Smith where you give him an alley, he's going to get 10 yards out of it.
Move him up the board.
And Robert Smith had more of that like savvy understanding where players were than Felix Jones, I think. I like that more than Felix Jones.
Glider in a good way.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
The only other one that I had that stood out to me was Damian Pierce, the Florida running back, reminded me a little bit of David Montgomery as far as tackle breaking, but also super clunky in the pass game. Just like don't throw him passes.
Clunky.
Yeah. Clunky in the pass game.
Scouting report.
Directly out of my notes.
I know he has some fans. I like him, but I don't like love him. But I like him. Like as a middle round back, I like him.
Right. I think he's gonna get you some yards. And break some tackles.
I got Ike Ekwonu as Kelechi Osemele. That's my last one.
Oh, that's Kelechi Osemele. That's just a throwback.
You're just going red, white, red uniform scouting there with Iowa State, NC State. That's what it is.
It's a shade of red.
It sounds like, for a second, I was like, wait, is Icky at Iowa State? No. That's good. I like that assembly.
That was my other one. Might end up as a guard. Who knows?
it's true. So this was fun. We had talked about this for a while, Nate. We were excited to have you on here. And tell our millions and millions of listeners, that's not real. Tell the people where they could find all your work.
You can find me mostly on Twitter at Nate_Tice. And now I am with The Athletic full time. You'll hear me on The Athletic Football Show with Robert Mays. Right now, I will be doing the draft coverage during the draft, but then also you'll hear me next once or twice a week. I just come and go. They wheel me out like Hannibal Lecter, and they just unravel me, and they just go, all right, go talk.
Here,
and they wrap me back up and pull me away. So that's where you'll hear me. But yeah, if you want some pictures of my cat or some wrestling references or some video game references, yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Nate_Tice.
Our people, they want that. And it's a much bigger demographic that understands Marty Jannetty than you think. Absolutely.
I'm
you'll see in the comments below. The people just give us the thumbs up. We know Marty Jannetty. So,
yeah.
Like Rockers, I said, we'd been talking about this for a while. Wanted to get just a comp show. That was fun. Could be a nice little annual event here. But, Nate, appreciate you joining us. And go follow Nate on Twitter and check out all of his work.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Nate. Really quick, just a reminder, 50% off PFF Elite right now. Draft 50 is your promo code, PFF Elite Annual. So go get it right now. All right, we'll be back again on Monday, the PFF NFL Podcast. Thanks to everybody for tuning in.